Eight, no pirate.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show. I hope you're enjoying Pesach, the Passover. We got two more days of it tonight, with the seventh and eighth day of Passover starting tonight at sundown. In this half hour of the show, we will be playing a rebroadcast of Rabbi Zvi Hirsch Weinreib from Koren Publishers. We're going to talk about the Koren Talmud and the importance of learning Talmud. They just came out with their 10th volume. They're a quarter away through the project, so it's time to bring him back on a little bit. We've got some really nifty music this half hour of the show. The portion of the week is the portion of Kedoshim, can be found in chapter 19 in the book of Leviticus, and we'll be hopefully tying that into the seventh day of Passover, which is again starts tonight. An awesome Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Very disturbing news coming out of Ukraine. A leaflet distributed in Donetsk, Ukraine, called for all Jews over 16 years of age to register their religion and property with the interim pro-Russian government or face deportation and loss of citizenship. The leaflet demands the city's Jews supply a detailed list of all property they own or else have their citizenship revoked and face deportation and see their assets confiscated. Donetsk, a Ukraine province with 4.3 million people, 10% of Ukraine's population, and 17,000 Jews, is home to much of the country's heavy industry. A meeting between Israeli and Palestinian Authority negotiators was canceled after the fatal shooting of an Israeli police officer near Hebron. 47-year-old Baruch Mizrahi, a commander in the intelligence division, was shot while driving with his family. His pregnant wife was injured in the attack. No one has yet to be arrested for this attack. Three Arabs died and five more were wounded after a bomb went off at a Hamas training camp in Gaza. The reason for the blast remains unclear. Dozens of Palestinians rioted in the West Bank town of Hebron, should be really called a city, throwing rocks and firebombs at IDF outposts dividing the Jewish and Palestinian parts of the town. The IDF employed crowd control measures, which left seven Palestinians wounded. The Temple Mount remains closed to Jewish visitors as of the second day of Passover, following rioting at the site by dozens of Arab teens. The Arabs threw rocks and firecrackers at Israeli security forces on the Temple Mount shortly after it opened for Jewish visitors on Wednesday. A German court in Nuremberg rejected an appeal of British Catholic Bishop Richard Williamson, who was convicted of denying the Holocaust and fined 1,800 euros. The 74-year-old Williamson openly doubted that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust and claimed that the real numbers were much lower. Williamson was deported from Argentina in 2009 after the government said he frequent denials of the Holocaust profoundly offended the Argentine society, the Jewish people, and all of humanity. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Thinman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, who is the executive vice president emeritus of the Orthodox Rabbis and is also the editor-in-chief of what we're going to be talking about, the new Koren Talmud Bavli, the Rabbi Adin Steinsalt commentary thereof. How are you today, Rabbi Weinreb?
I'm fine, Baruch Hashem. I'm speaking to you from Jerusalem, from Yerushalayim, where it is about 45 minutes away from Shabbat.
Okay, fair enough. We're taping this. Let's talk about, let's go back up. We're going to give a little basics, since many people who are listening to the Jewish Hour have no idea what the word Talmud means. So if you can, give us a concise definition of what is the Talmud, Rabbi Weinreb, and its significance.
Okay, well, the one of the basics of the Jewish tradition is that there are two Torahs. There's the written Torah, which is written on parchment, which we see in the Ark in the synagogue, and then there's the oral Torah, which is the interpretation and expansion and development and commentary upon the written Torah. The largest single work in the oral Torah is known as Talmud, and it consists of many, many volumes, printed, usually printed in 20 large volumes, and it is a commentary on every single aspect of Jewish life imaginable: history, ritual, legend, Jewish law, etc., and it's the basis of all further development of rabbinic commentary and Jewish law and practice.
Okay, that's great. That's a very, I like that concise definition. So people, Jewish people, study the Talmud regularly, on a regular basis, then, you would say.
Well, all Jewish people are supposed to study as much Torah as they possibly have time for. Most people who study Torah combine the study of a little bit of written Torah. They learn the weekly portion. Perhaps they learn some of the scriptures, some of the prophets. But they also allow time for study some of the oral Torah. And, of course, they then dip into the Talmud. What we've seen in recent years, it actually goes back to the 1920s, but it's become much more popular in the past 10 or 15 years, and that is what's called Daf Yomi, which means the daily page, in which people undertake studying the Talmud one page a day for as long as it takes to complete the Talmud. Now, doing it at that pace, there are 2,000-plus pages in the standard edition of the Talmud, so it takes about 7.5 years to study the Talmud day by day, day in and day out. We're about, in a week or two, to complete that cycle, and tens of thousands of Jews, literally tens of thousands of Jews all over the world, will be celebrating the Siyum, which means the completion of the entire Talmud, which is a 7.5-year project. And believe me, as you can imagine, and your listeners can imagine, it takes a great deal of commitment to wake up early every day or stay up a little bit later and devote an hour or more to studying the daily page.
Okay, now let's talk about the Daf Yomi a little bit. We say to study one page. Now, people are thinking, well, there's this book. Okay, everybody's got books at home, and all the books have pages. And so they're going to read one page of this book. So the people could read the page of a book in a couple minutes. What's the idea of a page a day of Talmud?
Well, first of all, a page in a Talmud really means what the average reader of a general book would call two pages, because there's two sides to the page.
Okay, so it takes 6 minutes.
And we turn it over. So it's really two pages, just for starters. But a page of Talmud, and of course I urge all listeners to take a glance at a picture or actual volume of Talmud, and you see what the page involves. The page involves a central text, which is no easy read. It's not the kind of thing you just curl up on your sofa and read it before bedtime. It's the kind of reading that takes concentration, it takes study, it's a dialogue, it's an argument. The arguments are usually complex and sophisticated. So when you say read a page, here you're talking about really studying a page. Rather than compare it to a book that you can easily read a page in a few minutes, I would compare it to a science textbook or for perhaps a mathematics textbook. For there, studying 2 pages a day is no easy matter. It takes a lot of concentration and thought and analysis. So that's kind of the answer to that question.
Our guest today is Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinrab, who is the editor-in-chief of the new edition of the Koran Talmud Bavli. We reported about 6 months ago on the Jewish Hour, we always have like some sort of cute story which ends off the news, that a delegation from Korea came to Israel, I don't know how long ago, and wanted to know why Jews are so smart. And they came up with the conclusion that it was because they studied the Talmud and then began study, then had the Talmud translated into Korean, where it is now part of the curriculum in many Korean schools. Would you say that studying the Talmud, Rabbi Weinrab, makes a person smart, or the person has to be smart to study Talmud?
Well, first of all, the whole South Korean story, of course, I read about it too, but I tend to take these kind of stories with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it was just a cute story.
Knowing how hard it is to translate the Talmud into English, and how many people are involved in the translation, I'm not quite sure that it was really done.
I actually saw it for sale on Amazon.com. Yeah, so,
really?
Yes. I don't know how many volumes they translated, but anyway, but in answer to the question, do you have to be smart?
There's no question that studying Talmud sharpens the mind. That's not the reason that we study Talmud. We study Talmud because we believe, ultimately, if a person wants to know, a Jewish person wants to know God's will, what God expects from us, the way to do that is to study Torah in general and to study Talmud in particular. And that's not an intellectual exercise. It's much more of a religious commitment. However, there's no question that the nature of the Talmud is such that it requires a lot of concentration and a lot of focus and a lot of thought and thinking things over again and again, a lot of argument, a lot of subtleties, a lot of fine distinctions, and there's no question that that sharpens the mind. There's no question about it. Whether it will sharpen the mind of a person who of another religion, you know, it's hard to say. I think part of why it sharpens the mind of a Jewish person is because it's not merely something he's reading or she's reading, but it's something that's being read to act upon, to live out in your life. So you give it a kind of an extra type of a serious concentration when you study it.
Okay. Thank you. The Koran Talmud is brand new. Volume 1 just came out. And it's going to be, is it going to take 7.5 years for it to be, or 7 years for it to be printed in its totality as the cycle of the one page a day progresses? You'll be like one book volume ahead of them? Is that the plan?
Our plan is at least to be able to stay ahead of the Daf Yomi schedule. So at this point, the first volume is already out there. It's for sale in local Jewish bookstores already. And that's it will have been available a full 6-8 weeks before people begin to study it in the Daf Yomi calendar. We have the second volume, which is the first half of the next tractate, which is Shabbat. That's at the printers now and will be available in the market in a matter of weeks, which means a good 2 months before the calendar. What we hope is to keep up that pace, at least, if not beat it. So our best-case scenario is if we can get all 41 volumes printed in about 4 years, but we certainly hope to do it within the 7.5-year span.
Okay. Now, tell that to the listeners. You know, it would be really good if this was television. We could show people on the page, but we don't. There is a website if people want to see what the page looks like, and we'll talk about that soon. In the 1930s, Onsino put out an English edition of the Talmud. Back in the 80s, Arscroll put out an edition of the Talmud, complete in 72 volumes. Tell us the nuance of the Koran Talmud Bavli, please, Rabbi Weinrab.
Okay. The when you say that it would be good to see it and alive, to see the picture of it, and you can do that on the Koren website, which is Koren, K-O-R-E-N, pub, P-U-B for publisher.com. You can see actual photos of it. It's an aesthetic masterpiece. It's really beautiful. It's in color. It has illustrations. It has charts, maps, etc., in full color. It actually comes in two sizes. The larger size is in full color. The smaller size, which is more of a portable edition, we call it the Dafyomi edition because it's much easier to transport, is not in color. But the layout is something very, very different from any of the previous editions of the Talmud, because in the page that is the facsimile of the original Vilna edition, everything is punctuated with vowels, with nekudot. So even a beginning reader of Hebrew can make sense of the text and the various commentaries on the classic page. At the other end of the book is the translation, where the text is repeated, again, with vowels, so it's easier to read. But the translation and the text there is spaced in such a way that instead of being faced with a block of text, you have each question separate in a separate paragraph with white space between it. Each line of dialogue is distinct. Each answer is distinct. If there are several answers, every answer is a separate, distinct paragraph. And in the margin, you have a tremendous array of other information, supplemental information, biographies of the various rabbis and various people who are mentioned in the Talmud. Kings, Gentile kings, kings of Persia, kings of Rome, etc. You have biographical material. You have historical background. You have an exploration of the language. The Talmud is written in Aramaic, but there are many, many words in the Talmud which are Greek or Latin or Persian or Arabic, an ancient form of Arabic. And you have commentary on that. You have various notes about what's called the flora and the fauna of the Talmud. The Talmud mentions various plants and trees and fruits and vegetables, and what we have is all of these species identified in their Latin terminology, often with photographs of these various plants or animals. So it's the whole page just comes alive graphically and visually in a way that's completely different from anything, any previous version of the Talmud or any translation of the Talmud. The other thing is that the translation, the English translation, is based upon the Hebrew translation, which was done by Rabbi Steinsaltz over the past 45 years or more. He began his project translating the Talmud into modern Hebrew about 45 years ago. And he did this single-handedly over the years. All we're doing in terms of our translation is taking his translation and rendering it from modern Hebrew into American English. So that's just a bit of what makes it unique and different from any of the predecessors.
Okay. Now, so you can clarify something. When in translating this, did you translate it from the original language into English, or did you translate it from the Steinsaltz translation?
It's an English translation of the Steinsaltz translation of the Talmud.
Okay, so it's like two steps away from the original then? What'd you say?
Two steps away from the original in that sense. It's a translation of Rabbi Steinsaltz's modern Hebrew. If a person can read and understand modern Hebrew, he does not need our translation. But the translation is made for the vast public that just understands English better than even contemporary Hebrew.
Okay. I'm actually very, very intrigued. Do you perchance have a copy of the Koren Talmud in front of you or near you?
Yes.
Okay. Would you mind doing, say, like the first line so that we can see what it is that you're talking about with, I don't know, we could spend a whole hour on it, but just...
Easily a whole hour. But I'll try to be very brief. I have in front of me actually a little booklet which we have available of a sample excerpt.
Mm-hmm.
And you can open it, if you imagine a book, you can open it from right to left as you would open a Hebrew book. And you do it that way. You have the classic page, but as I mentioned, with vowels, punctuation marks, question marks, quotation marks, etc. I won't go there right now. That's something to see. If you open it the way you would open up an English textbook, so of course you have the introductory and your pages, etc. But when the text begins, it begins with the very, very first Mishnah. The Mishnah is the core text of the Talmud, upon which the rest of the Talmud is an expansion. And the opening Mishnah of the entire Talmud begins really with the first mitzvah that a bar mitzvah boy does when he becomes bar mitzvah. As you know, and as I'm sure your audience knows, in the Jewish religion, the day begins at night. And the first mitzvah that nowadays that a person is obligated to do at night is to read the Kriyat Shema. It's to read those three paragraphs from the Torah, from the written Torah, which are part of every Siddur out there. But the Talmud begins with a discussion of, okay, that's the first thing we do at night. When exactly does night begin? It's a kind of a typical Talmudical question, trying to really define precisely those kinds of things that we take for granted. At what point does night begin, and when does that first mitzvah kick in? So that's kind of the opening line. And the Mishnah says, quote, I'm quoting now the English translation, from when, that is, from what time does one recite Shema in the evening? And the answer is, a strange one to a person who's new at this, from the time when the priests enter to partake of their terumah. Now, what's that all about? What priests are we talking about? What is terumah, etc.? So that's explained in the background notes. Terumah is the portion of a person's crop which he is biblically told to put aside and to give to the Kohen, to the priest. A Kohen has to consume that food which is his to eat as he chooses to eat it, but he has to eat it in a state of ritual purity. If it becomes impure, for example, he comes into contact with a dead rodent or whatever, so he goes to a mikveh, he goes to a body of water, immerses himself, and then when it becomes night, he can eat his terumah. Question is, when is night? The Mishnah does not answer it. It just says, well, it's night for Shema at the same time that it's night for the priest or the Kohen to be able to begin his new day and eat terumah. And it's not further defined until the Talmud picks it up. The Talmud picks it up a few paragraphs later and makes it much clearer to a person who's not at all familiar with priests or Truma or Kriyat Shema, and simply says that it becomes night when the stars come out. When it's dark and stars become visible, that's when night begins. And of course, there's a complex discussion, how many stars, what kind of stars, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, night begins when the stars come out, and that's a kind of a physical, scientific explanation with this definition of when night begins. But from a theological point of view, from the point of view of religious behavior, night begins from many, many different aspects of the Jewish religion, ranging from when the priests can eat truma, which is something which doesn't apply nowadays, basically, to when does a person begin each night to be obligated to recite those three paragraphs from the Siddur, and that's something that's very, very contemporary and applies to every observant Jew tonight, as well as every other day of the year.
Okay, that's wonderful. That's really, our guest has been, we've got to wrap this up over here. You got to get going. We've got to move on to the next segment. Our guest has been Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, is the Executive Vice President Emeritus for the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, and is currently the Editor-in-Chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli. Yes, you're going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say the organization is not the Orthodox Jewish Rabbis, it's the Orthodox Jewish Congregation.
Yes, the Orthodox
Union. or the OU.
The OU.
But the OU is not involved in this particular publication. This is something that, as emeritus, have a little more time on my hands than I used to, and I agreed to work with Coren Publishers on this new project.
Right, and if people want to know about Coren Publishing, I remember one of the first books that I bought back when I became religious when I was 17 was a tome called The Jerusalem Bible, which was published by Coren. They told me that it was the authoritative translation. I actually haven't found one better yet, to tell you the truth. So Coren is definitely reputable in what it does. The book is absolutely wonderful. I give it 5 thumbs up and suggest everybody run immediately to go buy it and start learning it. And my wife and I have started learning it a page at a time. Ready? We're chomping at the bit. Well, thank you so much, Rabbi Reinreich, for sharing this with us, and take care.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going
to
take...
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back, but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Schulfenman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Just as a follow-up, again, the Koran Talmud, also known as the English Steinsaltz, has just come out with Volume 10 of the series. It's Masechta Beah and Rosh Hashanah, the laws of holidays and the laws of keeping Rosh Hashanah. Very, very good. Very insightful. I love this tome. If you haven't started collecting them, you can get a subscription to it just by going online or going to Koren, K-O-R-E-N, publishing.com. And there you will see, like, just go to the public, just go to the website and check it out. They have like a virtual tour of the layout over there. Absolutely magnificent. I don't know if I think I reported this many years ago. The South Koreans came to Israel to find out why it was that Jews are so smart. And they concluded it was because the Jews study Talmud. Not whether that's true or not, but that was their conclusion, and it probably has a lot to do with it. But they commenced translating parts of the Talmud into South Korean, into Korean, and it's part of the study from seventh grade on in high school over there. So, want to get smarter? I'd suggest Koren Talmud might be the way to go. Check it out at their website. We've got some music for you. This is, I believe, the 4th week in a row we've played a Naftali Kalfabi song. This one, unfortunately, was written for Yossi Piamenti. So this is actually a duo between Naftali Kalfa and Yossi Piamenti. It's called Ya'ancha, which means answer me, because it was come to light that Yossi Piamenti, who is a famous Israeli musician living in Israel, has that dread disease and needs a complete recovery. And Yancha means answer us. Let's listen.
Lamnatzeach mizmor ledaveach mizmor Lamnatzeach mizmor ledaveach mizmor Yancha Hashem beyom tzana yisagev Hashem
Midash Nesela Yishlach Ezecha Mikodesh U'mizion Yisadeka Lamnatzeach mizmor
elav,
Yanach Hashem beyom tzarah, Yisakef Hashem elokei Yaakov. Yanach Hashem beyom tzarah, Yisakef Hashem elokei Yaakov. Yishlach ezecha mikodesh u'mitzion.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. It still is Pesach, and we should play a Pesach song. This is Yaakov Shweki. The song is Vehi She'amda. It's Mordechai Ben David's version of Vehi She'amda, which means that any time that any nation has stood up against the Jews, the Almighty has vanquished them and turned them into whatever they've been turned into. And let's listen in.
Seinu velo nu shelo yechod bilvo umado leinu lechad seinu umado leinu lechad seinu vehi sheo la seinu vehi sheomdo la seinu velo nu Shelo yechod bilvo, umado leinu lecha miseinu, umado leinu lecha miseinu. Vehakodesh baruch hu matzileinu, imatzileinu, miyodo. Vehakodesh baruch hu
Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I hope you're enjoying Pesach. This, for your listening pleasure now, is 613 is the name of the group. The song is called P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. That's just for you.
613, Afi Komen. Now we're back at the Seder. We're leaning to the left. Side, side, side. Side, 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 side. It's clear that this night is different from all other nights. Nights, 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 nights. Cut the banter. Now Zadie's making kiddush, so we stand up. We say poray, pre-hagaf, and we shake. My Sparty cousins eat rice, 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 rice. Flavorful, that's how I like my matzo balls. Got Pharaoh to let my people go, so we celebrate with unrisen dough. And yes, we'll make a fuss. Got a relative sitting next to us, little brother asking for questions, and I'm about to dip some vegetable. Throwing back 4 cups of wine, and after dinner time, the afikoman I must find. So let's go. Oh,
let's go!
Tonight the Seder's ours, ours, ours. Major dessert is par, 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 par. If it's chametz, we will starve, 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 starve. Because it's P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. Horseradish burns my tongue, 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 tongue. There's matzah in my tongue, 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 tongue. The table's full of crumbs, 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 crumbs. Because it's P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R. Raise that kiddush cup, 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 cup. Raise that kiddush cup, 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 cup.
Raise that kiddush cup, 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 cup.
Raise that kiddush cup, 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 cup. So put your hands up as we tell the story how we got our freedom. To take Israel, me, me, trying.
My tummy's filling up, but my heart is filling with pride, 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 pride.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulfinman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. As we said at the onset of the show, tonight marks the commemoration of the splitting of the sea, 3,326 years ago at the Yam Suf, the Sea of Reeds. This was, at that time, the greatest miracle ever wrought, only superseded by the giving of the Torah some 6 weeks later. What's the deal over here? Why was it necessary to split the sea? And indeed, there's a song which is sung at our Passover Seders that says if God had taken us out of Egypt and hadn't split the sea for us, it would have been enough. Some verses in between, but we could have gone some other way, because if you remember, the splitting of the sea wasn't necessary because at that time there was an isthmus that connected Africa, meaning Egypt, to Asia Minor, meaning the Sinai, and they could have walked across this land instead of having to go through this salt marsh, which is what it was. It wasn't the Red Sea, it was a Sea of Reeds, which is a salt marsh located probably where the Suez Canal is now. Or just south of the Suez Canal. And the whole thing could have just been avoided altogether. We see, though, that the Almighty did it this way because he wanted to seal the mindset of the Jewish people. Had it been so easy just to walk across, they could have just walked back. Which anytime anything went wrong in the Bible, it was, oh, here we are. We could have died in our beds in Egypt. We hadn't come to the desert, and I was complaining we should go back to Egypt. So like this, they knew they couldn't go back because they needed to have a sea split for them. They didn't know anything about topography and geography. There's a very interesting verse connected in with this week's Parsha to the holiday. It says quite clearly that we're not allowed to make fun or even remind a person who converts to Judaism that they converted to Judaism. This process of going out of Egypt and going through the Red Sea was a conversion process. The last step in converting to Judaism requires for a person to immerse in a ritual bath, a mikveh, a source of natural water. Thus sort of like cleansing away their old self and being reborn as a new self. This is the way Jews have converted for 3,326 years.
And Rashi, even on that verse, the classic biblical commentator, the simple interpretation says, you can't make fun of a convert because it's like, you know, saying the blemish that I have, I'm making fun of you. You are also converts. Everybody was a convert. Every Jew is considered a convert because we all had to go through that process. Are we still going through that process? Are we still experiencing the splitting of the sea? Well, kind of, sort of, yeah. We've talked about many times, it's already classic already, that the word Egypt in Hebrew, Mitzrayim, means limitations. And the splitting of the sea was sort of like a finality of the going out of Egypt. That's when the Jews were like really out of Egypt, even though the Exodus was a week ago, and it happened in the blink of an eye that they traveled from Ramses to Sukkos. Sukkos was already outside of Egypt, but there's still a great connection to Egypt. Like this, when they're on the other side of the sea, they were no longer in Egypt. And so it's the same deal. When we go through seventh day of Passover, which commemorates the splitting of the sea, we're also going back on those old limitations. It's a new year according to Judaism. We mentioned this also last week. Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the seventh month. It's a fiscal new year. Now Passover is the beginning of the year. It used to be when, during biblical Talmudic times, contracts would be dated first month of the year. It was first month from Nisan. And so here it is. It's the spring, believe it or not. The first day of Passover, it snows in a leap year, no less. So, but this is Detroit, and this is the springtime. The spring marks a new beginning. Passover marks a new beginning. It's time to rededicate ourselves again, and we should also start with a new beginning. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest, best way? RabbiFinman.com. www.rabbifinman.com. Right on the home page, you have a contact link. You'd have to go looking around anywhere. We also have archived editions of the show for the last month or so. And if you want something from more than a month ago, then you can go to iTunes or Stitcher or jcastnetwork.com. And they have, I think, every show since I've been on WLQV, which is like 4 years worth of shows just posted. You could have a Jewish Hour Marathon. Whoa. What else will there be? Well, you'll find archive editions of the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, the Hasidic U-Story, which are insights into the portion of the week, the Jewish calendar, Jewish stories, all presented in various other media than this one. And it's always good new stuff. And, of course, the very important donations page. We, for the month of April, we're almost there. We need a couple of those 36s to come in. People like to do that. I love it as they come in. $36, two times chai, two times life. As 18 equals life and two times chai is 36. So go to the Jewish Hour and just do a 36. Get us over the top so we can pay our bills for April and ensure that the Jewish Hour, now in its 18th year, will continue to broadcast on into the next millennia, that's 1,000 years from now approximately. Do it today. Don't like doing internet donations? I understand. There's all kinds of things going on in there with the internet, with people getting their credit card information stolen. We don't want to do that. Drop me a line. make your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Yontif is a time for being happy, and the question is asked, well, what makes people happy? Well, it says women are made happy with new clothes and jewelry. Men are happy with meat and wine. That's what it says in the Talmud. About 150 years ago or so, there was a young budding scholar who eventually grew up to be Reb Meir Premishlam, who was a very insightful person and was blessed with all sorts of spiritual powers. So it once happened. So what did he do? When he was 10 years old, he was learning with his teacher, and his teacher said that one of the greatest mitzvahs, one of the commandments that you could do, is to lend people money. Because like this, it sets them up. It doesn't feel like they're borrowing. They're beggars. They have a chance to pay back. And we do it at interest-free. And so he started a collection. And every Monday, he would go to the market. And he would stop by all the stalls. And he would ask people for donations for his fund. And then he would lend people money, small amounts. It'd be like, you know, a micro fund like they have today. And he would lend people for money for a couple of weeks, or if he needed money to buy wholesale, sell retail, that kind of stuff. And one time a butcher asked him, "I'll give you a fertzikel, which is, I don't know, which means in Yiddish a 40-cent piece, which is like a half a kronig, not very large. If you could tell me if this cow over here is kosher or not." One of the things that we have to determine is, aside from the ritual slaughter being absolutely perfect, if there's an abnormality on the inside of the cow, some sort of a pleurisy, a disease of any kind, some kind of pathology, then the animal is rendered invalid. "Could you tell me if this cow is kosher or not?" And he said, "That cow's not kosher." So he said, "Okay, how about this one?" He said, "It'll cost you another fertzik. It'll cost you another half a buck." So he paid him the other half a buck. And he said, "That cow is kosher." So this is interesting. So the butcher bought both cows. And the one that Reb Meir said was kosher. And the one that Reb Meir said was not kosher, was not kosher. So the next week, this kid comes into the market, and the butcher ran and said to him, "Come, tell me, is this kosher?" He said, "No." Paid him 50 cents. "Is this one kosher?" "Yes." He bought that one. He went to see, he bought 10 cows like this. It cost him probably all of like $8 or $9. And went and had them slaughtered, and all 10 cows were kosher. This went on for weeks. The guy was, because the way it worked back then is you took your chances, and if the cow wasn't kosher, so you sold it at a reduced rate to people who could eat the non-kosher meat. The other butchers started having fits. They're saying this guy's in some kind of collusion with the sheikhet, with the slaughterer, with the rabbi. Everything he gets is kosher. Made a whole investigation. And he didn't want to tell, but somebody watched him once as he went to go buy his meat. And he saw that he's walking around with the rabbi's son, this mayor of Premishlam. So they went and they told the kid, "Listen, maybe you could tell us your secret." He says, "No secret." He gives me a half a buck. He gives me a fair. It's like, I tell him which one's kosher, which one's not. This got back to the rabbi's teacher. The rabbi's teacher, it said, really, if it hadn't been admitted that he was the son of a big rabbi, then he would have smacked the kid. But he told him, "It's better that you don't do this anymore, that people shouldn't know what you can and can't do." He grew up to be the famed Reb Meir of Premishlam, and that's the rest of the story. I want to thank you so much. We hope you have a great Yontif tonight, seventh day of Passover, the eighth day of Passover, a portion of Kedoshim at the end of the week, and we hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Take care. We'll see you again next week.
God bless you. It's Bishop Hoskins.
And Pastor Gene.
From the Power of Faith, Full Gospel Radio Ministry.
We have a strong biblical teaching for you every second and fourth Sunday right here on AM 1500 WLQV.
Talk radio. Join us and be blessed abundantly. And as I always say,